You're Locked On Maple Leafs, your daily podcast on the Toronto Maple Leafs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Leafs podcast, your one-stop shop for all things Leafs. I'm your host, Mike DiStefano from TSN 1050 Toronto Radio, also known as Al's brother from TSN's Overdrive. You can get me up on Twitter at Mickey_Canuck, follow the show as well at Locked On Leafs. If you like what you hear today, please consider subscribing to the podcast. Leave a rating and review as well. That would be much, much appreciated. All right, we're pretty well ready to move on to the offseason. We got a couple other things that we're going to shore up. Later in the week, I'm going to have Ken Stapon on. And if you recall, at the beginning of the year, Ken and I actually did an episode of Over-Unders where we took a look. I came up with some good prop bets, and we decided whether or not we want to take the over or the under. We have a winner. The year is now done, obviously, and this was for regular season prop bets, that is, not during the playoffs, but we have a winner. One of us came out on top with our over-under prop bets, and so later in the week, I'm going to have Ken Stapon on for that, but today, what we're going to be chatting about, I'm going to start this little mini-series where I'm going to be examining the position groups. So we're going to examine the forward groups today and just see kind of, you know, what each player did at the forward group, how they did as a whole, and, you know, what's the outlook with this team with that specific player. So we'll start off, obviously, by talking about the team centers. They'll move on to the wingers. And then we'll take a look at some of the taxi squad fringe roster kind of guys and see what their positions are with this team, the forwards at least, who are kind of either played a game, you know, were taxi squad guys who went up and down, fringe roster players. But let's start with the big boys, and let's just get right into it. Let's start with the big boy, and that's Austin Matthews. Matty Rockets, Big Tony, whatever the heck you want to call him. This guy was absolutely phenomenal this season. A-plus year for Austin Matthews. He's now been nominated not only for the Lady Bing, but also the Ted Lindsay. The Ted Lindsay Award is probably the most prestigious award for players. Look, the Hart is the MVP, and it's obviously a great award to get. But the Ted Lindsay, if you're not aware, is voted upon by the players. So the players believe that Austin Matthews is a top three player in the league. In the league. So I've always speculated it. I've said it. You know, I think he might be a top three guy, certainly a top 10 guy, and pushing for top five status. And I figure top three, you know, maybe he's even in that conversation. And obviously the players agree because they've gone ahead and they said, look, the guy scored 41 goals, a lot more than the next guy, who I believe was Connor McDavid with 33, I want to say. So, look, Matthews just absolutely annihilated the goalies in the North Division this year. Just put it past him. And, look, there's some good goalies, man. There are some really good goalies. Jacob Markstrom, really good goalie. Mike Smith had a great year. Carey Price, obviously, you're seeing what he's doing. He didn't do that in the regular season, but he's still a terrific goaltender. You take a look at guys like Connor Hellebuck, who is a Vezina, you know, caliber goaltender. Thatcher Demko had himself a heck of a run at one point. And, you know, so there's some really good, solid attendees that he had to try and score on this year. And he it didn't bother him at all. He was able to do it, scored a lot. 41 goals. He's going to win the Rocket Richard. 66 points in total through 52 games. Lady Bing nominee as well. Austin Matthews had himself a heck of a year, probably the best season out of a Toronto Maple Leaf. I mean, definitely since Dougie's 93 year, but I mean, this could possibly be like the greatest season a Maple Leaf has ever had. It easily could be. Again, I've said this multiple times on this podcast. I'm not really a historian, so I don't want to claim that because I'm just not a historian, so I can't say this is the best, considering that this team is over 100 years old. But definitely, since I started watching this team, since I've been a fan for the last two decades, by far the best season by a Maple Leaf, bar none. Easy. Heck of a year out of Austin Matthews. All right. John Tavares, the captain. Johnny Toronto. Johnny T. Yeah, we're going to play the nickname game, I guess, every time we talk about one of these guys who's got a nickname. 19 goals, 31 assists for 50 points in 56 games. So he was healthy this year, which is extremely encouraging. You know, a couple of years ago, had that finger injury, and then, you know, so it's nice to have a full season with Tavares not injured. Bit of a Jekyll and Hyde type season for him, though, right? You think about the way that things started, not great. And it was really the whole second line in general just wasn't giving much offense. Him and Willie together weren't doing well. And then along came Steve Simmons and wrote an article that got under a lot of people's skin, I might add. But essentially just saying that Tavares and Nylander weren't doing enough for what they're being paid. Kind of like what happened with Matthews and Marner in the playoffs, just saying. But for whatever reason, and I don't know if this has anything to do with it, but ever since that, article, it really lit a fire underneath Tavares and William Nylander. It did. You know, you could say whatever you want, but it did. You know, they went off in the second half of the season. So, you know, John Tavares, clearly a massive piece of the puzzle here in Toronto. There's conversations about whether or not this core four, if they can win with them, is someone going to have to go? And Tavares is the one with the lowest ceiling at this point in his career, considering he makes $11 million. But at the end of the day, I mean, he's not going anywhere, right? And you know, the year... If Tavares was healthy through the playoffs, too, like, the Leafs would be playing the Winnipeg Jets right now, not Montreal. I fully, fully believe that. So that just goes to prove how important John Tavares actually is to this group, where he was eliminated from the series due to injury, and they just weren't able to combat that. They don't have the depth down the middle where a guy like Matthews or Tavares gets injured and they can combat that and still come up with victories. They just weren't able to do it, unfortunately. We'll keep it going with these centermen, but Tavares, he's not going anywhere. And I think he had a pretty good year, actually. There was a lot, like going into the season, Marner and Matthews were being put together. That was already known. We knew that was happening. And John Tavares... It was taken off the first power play unit, you know, so there was already a thought that his production was going to drop. And, I mean, it somewhat did, I think. Like, you think JT, you think maybe point per game type player, and he wasn't that this year at 50 through 56. But still, eventually him and Nylander got going, and he finished off the year right. All right, Kerfoot. Alex Kerfoot, Kerfy. That's about it. I don't think Kerf. That's pretty much the only nicknames I think he has. Maybe Jumbo's got a nickname for him, but I don't. Kerfoot, 8 goals, 15 assists, 23 points through 56 games. He was kind of a Swiss Army knife a little bit, played a little bit at the wing position, mostly played down the middle in the third line, you know, got moved up to the second line at times, played well in the playoffs. You know, let's not forget about that. Had a fantastic playoff, probably a top five player for Toronto. One of the reasons why they won was a game four, I want to say. Yeah, game four, that Nylander, Kerfoot, and Galchenyuk line was just electric. But here's the thing with Kerfoot. We didn't see it through the regular season and up until the playoffs. We weren't really sure why Kyle Dubas traded Nazem Kadri to bring this guy in, or why he felt that Kerfoot could replace Kadri. I mean, we know that the main piece obviously was Tyson Barrie, and I get that. But also, he thought that Kerfoot, and I think giving him $3.5 million annually also suggested that Kerfoot could be a third line center. And we just did not see that at all through the first season, and then through the regular season this year, didn't really see that. He had some spurts where you saw some glimpses that you liked, but overall, wasn't great, and then had a really good playoff. The thing with Kerfoot, and this is more so the conversation we can have now with him, is I'm not sure what his role with this team will be going forward. That $3.5 million cap hit is quite a bit. He's got two more years left on that deal as well. He is somebody who the Leafs can expose and potentially have Seattle taking the expansion. And I think that the play of Kerfoot during the playoffs actually enhanced those chances of happening. And I've heard a lot of people around, mainly on Leafs Twitter, say, you know, come to Kerfoot's defense, and people don't want to see Kerfoot go. But at the end of the day, I'm sorry, someone has to. That's making a little bit of money, and someone has to be taken in the expansion draft. And I think Kerfoot is definitely more expendable than a guy like Justin Hull. And I believe it would probably come down to those two players. Maybe Travis Dermott. There's a small chance that Pierre Engvall could be of interest in the draft, expansion draft. But I think that Alex Kerfoot, after showing what he was able to do in the playoffs, you know, Seattle could be looking and saying, this is someone who we could chuck on our top nine, whether it's as a second-line center or a third-line center. We see something here. Maybe we'll take a little bit of a risk on him. Because remember, they got to get to the cap floor too. So $3.5 million on a guy who you can use in your middle six, I think is very useful. And I think much like we saw happen last time with Vegas, we know there's going to be a lot of defensemen available because teams can only protect their top three, which means there's going to be a lot of, you know, four or five guys who are pretty good that will be available. I'm not too sure how many middle six centermen there will be. So a guy like Kerfoot, I think, is going to be really attractive. So I'm not saying that Kerfoot needs to go or that this team will be better off, but I would be shocked, actually, to see Kerfoot on this team after the expansion draft. And if not the expansion draft, even though like he's making $3.5 million, maybe they could try and trade him this offseason and get something for that and open up cap space. Right, they got to sign a goalie. They got to sign Hyman. Next year, Morgan Riley's up for a renewal. You know, they've got some rookies that are coming up for renewals as well. So, again, for those who are very much Team Kerfoot, don't trade Kerfoot, protect Kerfoot. You got to know what's going on and who all is available here at the expansion draft. And what exactly this team could benefit from by getting that contract off the books. That said, I thought that his year wasn't great, but his playoffs was good. And we'll see what happens with him. He's the guy who, as of now, I've slotted as the roster player that is going to be taken by Seattle. But we'll see. Stocks, memes, rocket ships, day trading can be a lot of fun, but if you want to grow your long-term wealth and make it to the moon, you should open up a Wealthfront investment account today. Investing can be complicated, but whether you're a beginner or you've been investing for years, Wealthfront makes it easy. They have the right tools for every portfolio. Wealthfront is trusted with over $20 billion of assets, and you can get your first $5,000 managed for free by going to wealthfront.com/lockedonNHL. All you need is $500, get started, grow your wealth in an easy way, and let Wealthfront do the work for you. To get your first $5,000 managed free for life, go to wealthfront.com/lockedonNHL. That's WELTHFRONT.com/lockedonNHL to start growing your savings. Go to wealthfront.com/lockedonNHL and get started today. Lucy Nicotine is a company founded by Caltech scientists and former smokers looking for a better and cleaner nicotine alternative. Finally, tobacco alternatives that don't suck. Researched and developed for 3 years to be made for people, not patients. Lucy has created a nicotine gum with 4 milligrams of nicotine that comes in 3 flavors, wintergreen, cinnamon, and pomegranate. Lucy also has a lozenge with 4 milligrams of nicotine that comes in 3 flavors, cherry ice, citrus, and mint. Lucy lozenges and gums are FSA and HSA eligible, so you can use your FSA cards to purchase Lucy now. And it's convenient and discreet. Products can be enjoyed anywhere, on flights, at work, on the go, or even in the gym. It's 2021. Get rid of your cigarettes, unplug your vape, throw out your dip, and get some Lucy nicotine gum or lozenges now. This is the real deal. A subscription to Lucy comes directly to your door each month. It's so simple, you don't even have to leave your house because Lucy has delivery down. Lucy lozenges and gums are also FSA and HSA eligible, so you can spend pre-tax dollars on them. Locked On NHL Network listeners, go to lucy.co and use promo code LOCKEDONNHL to get 20% off all products on your first order, including gum or lozenges. That's lucy.co and use the promo code LOCKEDONNHL at checkout. Also, I do have to give this disclaimer. Warning, this product contains nicotine derived from tobacco. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Lucy.co, and be sure to use that promo code LOCKEDONNHL. Let's move it down a little bit more, because we're going to run out of time here. I spoke way too much about Kerfoot there. I probably could do an entire segment just on potential guys. I will do that at some point about guys who will be available in the expansion. But let's move on. Let's get to the centerman, okay? So Jason Spezza, fantastic year. 10 goals, 20 assists, 30 points for Jason Spezza in 54 games. 30 points! Average 3.11 points per 60, good for third in the NHL. Spezza was the third most productive player when on the ice this season. And that makes sense. Like, when you look at it, he was great. Vintage. Turned the clock back and was phenomenal, not only in the playoffs, but also during the regular season. And he's someone who I think the Leafs want to bring back. It was, you know, Kyle Dubas came out and basically said, we're going to talk to Jason, but if he wants to come back, we're going to speak with Sheldon as well. If they're both game, he's somebody that Dubas would love to bring back. And I mean, Spezza as a fourth liner, he's a great veteran. He's a gamer. He thinks the game so well. I think that Spezza is clearly somebody the Leafs should have in their back pocket going into next season. So hopefully Spezza does stick around. And we'll see. But I thought he had a terrific, terrific season. All right, moving back down again. Let's get to... No, I'm going to save him. I'm going to save him for the end. Let's get to Pierre Engvall. 7 goals, 5 assists, 12 points in 42 games. Pierre Engvall is an interesting player. At times, I really like what I see from him. And at times, I really don't. He looks super disengaged. And he just looks, you know, lost out there at times. But then sometimes he's like totally engaged, buying in, you know, using his speed, forechecking, laying hits, you know, has a little bit of jam, can score a little bit in, you know, limited capacity, can kill some penalties. But overall, you know, Pierre Engvall is, I think, a fourth liner. At the end of the day, I think that he is a fourth line center, kind of winger. You know, I know he's played down the middle. The Leafs have tried to get him to play down the middle quite a bit. I'm still not sold that, like, that's where he is and where he's best at. But he did a lot better this year than he did last year down the middle. But Pierre Engvall is a guy who I believe is an RFA. He might have one more year left on his deal, actually. But Engvall is certainly somebody who I believe the Leafs like going forward and will factor into this team's bottom six. I think Engvall is somebody who they look at potentially as like a Thornton-esque replacement, I guess, as like a staple on the fourth line, along with Jason Spezza, and then insert, you know, another player there, you know, whether it's a young guy or they bring somebody in from free agency or they do that thing like they did last year and they just go, you know, sign in random people to, you know, sub-million-dollar deals just to make it work on the cap. But Engvall is somebody who I thought had a decent season, definitely played pretty well during the playoffs as well, and will be a piece of this team going forward if he's not chosen by Seattle, which also is a possibility. Like, he's still young enough where I think Seattle's going to need, like, those younger kind of guys. You think of, like, you know, the players that Vegas took. They took some like Thomas Hikas and
Will Carrier, and, you know, just like some grinder fourth liners who needed to just fill the roster, and they turned out to be decent players and guys who definitely could play. I think Engvall could play for sure. He could play on this team on the fourth line, which means he could definitely play on a fourth line expansion team, maybe even a third line expansion player. But Engvall, somebody I think has proven now he is a legit NHLer and he's in the NHL to stay. And I like what I see from Engvall going forward. All right, Adam Brooks, real interesting piece here. Only played 11 games in the regular season, 4 goals and 1 assist for 5 points through those 11 games. Look, Brooks, I thought, actually looked the best when he was centering a line of Thornton and Spezza. That line, no matter what, when they were playing, were always productive. They always were good in the offensive zone. They really pushed the puck around in the offensive end when they had it. Got some good looks, some good opportunities. Like, Brooks, 4 goals in 11 games, like, for a fourth liner. You're not expected to do that at all. But, you know, he was able to put up some offense along with Spezza and Thornton. So, you know, I thought that Adam Brooks is another player that I think the Leafs like, would like to keep around as one of those fringe roster players who potentially could go in and be, you know, either a depth guy or a fourth liner. You know, like if Engvall ends up moving up into the third line, or if Engvall, you know, maybe have Brooks, Engvall, and Spezza as your fourth line next year. That's a possibility. But either way, I think they like what they saw out of Adam Brooks in his rookie year, and I did too. I thought that he was definitely wasn't, didn't get like, what's the word I'm looking for here? He's definitely a fourth liner. You know, he didn't prove that he doesn't belong. He definitely belongs in the NHL, I think. We'll quickly look at Riley Nash, I suppose, since technically he's a centerman on the roster. Played just a couple playoff games, really a non-factor. The Leafs gave up a 2022 conditional 6th-round pick, and it ended up hitting because he played, I think it was like 25% of the playoff games, which he did. So Riley Nash, I mean, whatever. They gave up a 6th-rounder. I'm not upset about it. But it definitely was a little bit of a disappointment because I thought he was going to be a little better than that. I thought he would actually factor in as like a third or fourth line center for this team. And he didn't really factor in. I mean, he got taken out of the lineup, you know? So Riley Nash, for me, definitely was a big disappointment in the couple of games that he played. Granted, was coming off a pretty big injury where he hadn't played in a couple of months. So, you know, is that the Riley Nash that would have seen if he was completely healthy? No, definitely not. But the one that we did see, and that's all I can grade upon, and that's all I can comment on, I didn't really like what I saw. He was kind of slow. He definitely wasn't 100%, that's for sure. And he didn't help this team win the way that I kind of thought that he would. So, you know, Nash, not too happy with, I'm not going to say I'm not happy, but didn't move any sort of needle for me as a deadline acquisition. But for a 6th-rounder, I guess you're not really asking for too much anyways. And that brings me to Jumbo Joe Thornton. Quite the roller coaster year for Thornton. Started off the season on the top line with Matthews and Marner, which blew my mind when I first saw it. I'm sure a lot of you, too, were not expecting that to happen, but it did. And here's what he churned out. 5 goals, 15 assists, 20 points in 44 games. So it was a roller coaster season, right? So he started out with the top line, eventually got dropped to the second, then to the fourth, back up to the first, then got hurt, then to the fourth, back up top, and ended up finishing the year on the fourth line, where he actually ended up doing decent. Like, the last 10 games of regular season, something happened with this team where he was able to, or with this, with Thornton, where he actually, like, kind of flipped the switch. And I thought it was going to be a much longer run with him with this, like, flip-switching thing, where I thought he was going to be a beast during the playoffs, and it didn't really happen. He turned to a pumpkin in the playoffs, which is super unfortunate for a guy who's a 100% Hall of Famer. you know, a guy who Leaf fans had wanted on this team for so long, and he finally gets here and puts up, you know, kind of a cruddy playoff performance. But Joe Thornton, I don't think he's back next year. I really don't. I don't know if he returns to the NHL. You know, by the end of it, definitely in the playoffs, he looked like a man on his last legs for a lot of it. So Thornton definitely, I don't think is going to be back. Whether or not he plays in the NHL again, we'll see. We'll definitely have to see on that one. But regardless, don't think the jumbo experiment really worked in Toronto, because I also thought he would give this team a little bit of push when they needed it, when they needed that veteran leadership. I thought that he would kind of give them that killer instinct. This is a guy who's won on many levels, world championships, Olympic championships, you know, hasn't won a Stanley Cup, but he's won at other, you know, international events. So I thought maybe that's enough for him to have a winning a killer instinct, but wasn't able to do it, wasn't able to get this team riled up when they needed it most towards the end of the playoffs. And for that, I would consider the Joe Thornton experiment a little bit of a failure. A little bit of a failure. But at, what, $700,000? I guess you can't really ask for more than 20 points in 44 games. A guy who's just basically good to give you 10 minutes where he's not that much of a liability. So, you know, when you take a look at the contract numbers and the production per dollar type of measurements, I guess it worked. But in terms of what I thought Thornton was going to bring this team off the ice, especially once the playoffs came around, seems like a bit of a failure in my books. All right, taking a quick break here. When we come back, we'll get to the wingers. So we'll get to the wingers, and that's probably going to be it, because it's ended up going quite long. So maybe we'll extend and do these taxi fringe guys a little bit later. Maybe we won't do them, I guess, since they are fringe players. But we'll take a look at the wingers when we return here from this break here on the Locked On Leafs podcast. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. Did you know that the Built Bar has 9 delicious flavors, plus the occasional limited time only? Right now, they've got Grasshopper Cookie. It is phenomenal. And when you talk to a Built Bar fan, they're definitely passionate about all of their favorites. If you don't know the Built Bar flavors, well, you're missing out. You got coconut, coconut almond, cherry, raspberry, mint brownie, peanut butter brownie, double chocolate, and salted caramel. So there's something for everyone. And know this, my favorite flavor, the peanut butter brownie. It is fantastic. And if you haven't tried all the flavors, you can get a mix box where you'll get 2 of each of the 9 flavors that we provide. And not only are the Built Bar flavors the best tasting, but they're healthy too. They're great for the health conscious guy or gal, but also good for the keto diet. Most of the flavors have 17 grams of protein, just 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, and only 4 grams of net carbs. Order today and get that raspberry or mint brownie or whatever you like, and get it now. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKED15. You'll get 15% off your first order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. All right, welcome back to the Locked On Leafs podcast. Mike DiStefano, the host of this program. And just a reminder, this is a daily Maple Leafs program. We're taking a look at what all of the players did, the forwards at least, did this season with the Toronto Maple Leafs throughout the regular season. A little look at the playoffs, but mainly, you know, how did they do? How did their year go? And kind of what should we be expecting for them in the future? So we just did the centermen. Now let's take a look at this team's wingers. So let's start with Mitch Marner. Clearly did not have the playoffs that we were all hoping he would have. He was downright awful, actually, in the playoffs. Just 1 point. You need more than that. You got to give us more than that. He's gone 18 playoff games without a goal. It's just he has not performed in the playoffs. There is no other way to defend this guy in the playoffs at all. The regular season, though, man, is he magical. 20 goals, 47 assists, 67 points in 55 games. Like, this guy's on pace for over 100 points. You know, so Marner is a heck of a talent. He's not going anywhere. I'll tell you that right now. There's a lot of people who I've heard talking on Twitter and talking on, you know, other shows and, you know, saying, hey, could this team potentially move on from Marner? Is Mitch Marner a guy who you can't win with? I don't know if that's the case, but I do know that he's not going anywhere. This team is not going to blow it up, and they're certainly not going to give up one of their best players. Teams would absolutely kill for a guy like this. But one of the best players in the league, honestly, he is. Like, he's a franchise player on any other team. You know, we gave him, you know, his lashings when he was bad in the playoffs, but at the end of the day, he still is a really good player. Is he worth $11 million? I don't know. I think you need to play a little better in the playoffs to be worth that kind of money. But I still think that he is one of the best players in the league, one of the most talented players in the league, one of the most fun players to watch in the league. He just needs to step it up in the playoffs. That's it. I think he can do it. I hope he can do it. I really hope he can do it. But he's not going anywhere. For those who think that Marner is on the outs. I mean, the guy kills penalties. He's on the power play. He scores goals, sets up goals. He creates on his own. I mean, this guy is absolutely a franchise player, and we're lucky that he's like a 1B to Matthews' 1A. All right, let's move on to William Nylander. Bill Nye, the wrist shot guy, or Willie Rockets, as I believe I called him at one point, and definitely reintroduced Willie Rockets in the playoffs when he went off. If Mitch Marner was the most disappointing player in the playoffs, William Nylander was the best player in the playoffs. The most overachiever. Not even overachiever. I think that's pretty well like what we can expect out of Nylander, but definitely was the best player. Regular season, though, like I mentioned with Tavares, it was very up and down. It was a slow start and a pretty hot finish, which he continued into the playoffs, luckily. So 17 goals, 25 assists, 42 points through 51 games. Again, a lot of that production coming in the latter half of the season. So the thing with Nylander, which has always been the problem with him, has been consistency. But what we saw the last, I'll say, month of the season, including the playoffs, was an extremely consistent Nylander, not just in the offensive end, but in the defensive end. His game took massive strides this year in both parties, offensively and defensively. Much more harder on the puck, actually back checks. It's not that he has a good back check, but he actually back checks, something he didn't do much prior to this season. You know, he was hard in on the forecheck. He had a good active stick knocking down passes. You know, so Nylander took a massive step up this season. It took a little bit to happen, but once it did and something clicked, he really, really started to get going and became a dominating force where now people are finally looking at that, you know, that 40 or that $10 million contract. $10 million. Looking at that $7 million contract and saying, man, what a bargain. And when you compare it to Marner's 11, yeah, seems like a bargain considering what they just did in the playoffs. But, like, I've always thought that Nylander had this in him, and Nylander was always worth the money that he had. The hate towards this guy was thought that it was unwarranted, but because the way he was playing earlier in the year, he definitely had a lot more in him. So I guess it was warranted for people to question his play, but to say that, you know, he wasn't worth his money and that they needed to trade him, and that he's soft and you know, typical European, only looking to play the skill game, not willing to muck it up. Total garbage, because he proved otherwise this season and certainly did in the playoffs. And Nylander is going to be a part of this team for a long time. I'll tell you that. All right, Zach Hyman. 15 goals, 18 assists, 33 points in 43 games. Unfortunately, a non-factor through the playoffs due to his injury. Keep in mind that he injured himself, you know, at the end of the season and didn't end up playing until the playoffs. And then he came back and was maybe 40%. And you could tell, and that definitely hindered the play of that top line with Matthews and Marner as well. But when Hyman was going this year, like when he was really going before his injury, he was arguably the third best player on this team behind Matthews and Marner. Like, he was the straw that stirred the drink. There was an issue on the top line. All right, well, let's just send out, let's put Zach Hyman on the line. Okay, now Willie and Tavares need help getting going. Like, what should we do? Let's drop Tavares on that line. We'll put Kerfoot on the top, or Galchenyuk on the top line. And all of a sudden, now Tavares and Nylander are getting going. They did the same thing with the third line. They wanted to get some offense going from the depth, and he got the third line going. He was a great penalty killer. They put him on the number one power play. He was scoring goals, not just, you know, easy tap-ins, but he was going north-south, deking out three different guys and scoring really nice goals, making really nice plays. He's one of those guys who, if you see on Twitter where it says, like, there's, like, a bar, so it's, like, production is, like, full, and then it's respect or acknowledgement of skill is, like, low. For people outside of Toronto, because I know that that most Leaf fans understand Hyman's game, and they understand how important he is and how good he is, but outside of Toronto, he's, like, that guy who definitely is always better than people think, and then they watch and like, wow, I didn't realize that Hyman was that good. Yeah, he is. Here's the problem. He's a free agent this summer, guys. He could walk. I don't know what the number's going to be. I clearly, you know, am not privy to those conversations. But there was a report a couple of days ago that he had turned down $5 million. Now, his agent came out and said, no, that's not true. You know, we haven't received an offer, and we never refused an offer because we had not received one. I mean, whether or not that's true or that's just kind of, you know, just kind of posturing, I don't know. But I don't think that this guy is going to take as much a hometown discount as people think. I've had conversations with some Leaf fans that are hoping that he takes in the $4 to $4.5 million range. I just don't see it. Like, I think the number starts with a five, and if he takes 5x5, that's a hometown discount. That is such a discount. What I would sign him to, if I were the general manager, I don't think I would go more than 5.5. on like a multi-year deal. I don't know if they can afford that, considering how much money they're already paying to their top four guys at the forward position, knowing that you also have Morgan Riley's contract coming up for renewal next season, along with Jack Campbell. So, you know, a long-term multi-year deal at a high cap hit, like, there's some... I understand that some money's coming off the books, like Anderson's $5 million coming off the books. If Kerfoot gets taken, that's another $3.5 million off the books. But, you know, it gets real tricky when you actually sit down and you try and fudge the numbers on how this team is going to construct themselves next year. And to think that if Hyman wants to sign for more than $5.5 million, if he's looking for $6 million, which some team on the open market could very well be interested in giving him that much money, I don't know if he's back here. I know he's a Toronto boy, and I know that a lot of people think that there's no way he can leave. He loves Toronto. Toronto through and through. He'll take whatever to play here. He just wants to be with Toronto. Look, guys, at the end of the day, I mean, it's a business. It's a job. And you're only doing this job for, like, a few years. Like, most of these guys, like, this is going to be his final big contract. Most of these guys don't get a contract again into their 30-year age. Like, not a lot of guys will sign contracts at 33, 34, 35, unless you're like Eric Staal or Corey Perry. You know, Wayne Simmonds barely got a deal. And Wayne Simmonds was a pretty darn good player earlier in his career. And he signed a pretty team-friendly deal and then wasn't able to capitalize when he became a free agent again. I don't know if Zach Hyman will do that. You know, there's one thing between a team-friendly deal and taking a fair market deal. I think 5.5 would be like fair market because he could probably get $6 million on the open market. So you take a little bit of a discount to stay home. But for those hoping he'll sign for $4-4.5 million, or you're saying if he doesn't take less than $4 million, then let him go. Well, then you're basically walking him away because there's not a chance that Hyman signs for anything less than $5 million, in my opinion, I suppose. So yes, there's a chance, but I don't think that's to be the case. Nick Foligno, not much to say, gave up a first-round pick to get him, ended up with 4 points in 7 games through the regular season, much like Hyman, hurt in the playoffs, didn't give you much production. You're going to think about, the biggest thing you're going to think about for Foligno is the fact that, like, his dad played for the team, he was a great interview, you know, he's a great interview, and that he fought Corey Perry when Tavares went down. Like, that's his biggest contribution, I guess. The biggest thing that Leaf fans are going to remember him by. And that's unfortunate considering he gave up a first-round pick to get him. I'm not saying that I disagreed with it or that in hindsight, you know, I wish that Kyle didn't do it. I understood the deal. I liked the deal. I signed off on the deal at the time. But, you know, injuries happen. And when you got a 40% Nick Foligno at age, what is he, 35 years old, already kind of, you know, slowing down in his career. He's not really a goal scorer. The best he can do is, you know, kind of be a pain in the butt to play against. But when you're at 40%, you just can't really do that at this point in his career, and he didn't give you too much. So I'd be surprised if Foligno came back next season. I really would be. You know, unless he's willing to come back on a super cheap deal just to return to Toronto. But if he wants to get what other teams would give him, and I would expect him to go back to Columbus, to be honest with you. They'll probably give him, you know, $4 million or something like that. Toronto won't. Well, I think we're going to have to kind of speed through the next few here. Already up to 40 minutes almost. All right, we'll speed through here. Okay, Galchenyuk. Unreal trade by Kyle Dubas midseason. 4 goals, 8 assists, 12 points through 26 games. Look, this was found money. They gave up next to nothing to get him. They sent him down to the minors, and then they brought him up, and he hit the ground running. He knew that this was his final chance to stick in the NHL, and if he wasn't able to do it here, there's a slim chance that he got a contract next year. And I think that he played well enough, and he proved well enough. Even in the playoffs, I thought he played really good. He played maybe to get a contract with the Leafs next year if he comes back on another cheap deal. I don't know what the market is going to be on a guy like Galchenyuk. I really don't, to be honest. Maybe he will come back on another $1 million deal, knowing that, you know, it was really the opportunity to play with guys like Nylander or Tavares that allowed him to kind of get his career back on track, and maybe for that he would sign a pretty, you know, a cheap 1-year deal to maybe cash in the following summer once he has, you know, a bigger sample size of being, you know, that guy again that he once was. So I don't know what ends up happening with Galchenyuk, but that was a great trade, probably the most underrated trade in the NHL, like, in Dubas's career, maybe. Like, that was a fantastic little piece of work to bring in a top six guy who actually, you know, performed pretty well for Toronto. Ilya Mikheyev, 7 goals, 10 assists, 17 points. Superman, also. Definitely got to get the nickname in there. So, yeah, 17 points in 54 games. 7 goals. I'm not going to lie to you. I think he scored those, like, 5 of those 7 goals in the last, like, 10 games. Because for the longest time, Mikheyev was so snake bitten. He was guaranteed 2 or 3 faceoffs a week or a game. A game. 2 or faceoffs. What am I saying? 2 or 3 breakaways a game. So two or three breakaways a game, and he would miss on every single one of them. Whether, the puck rolled off his stick, he would get stopped, wasn't able to get all of it. Whatever happened, this dude's puck luck was incredibly bad. Incredibly bad, to the point where I'm surprised that he finished with 7 goals. And of those 7, I think like 5 of them just like went off his ass or something. Like legitimately, he was so snake bitten. He couldn't, anytime he shot the puck, it was guaranteed not to go in. Like it was that bad. The only way he got one was off a redirect or of some kind, whether it went off of another defenseman or he was net front and it went off of him. That was the only way this man was scoring goals this year. So a sophomore slump definitely out of Ilya Mikheyev after what I thought was actually a really solid rookie campaign his first year in North America, and he did not follow it up the way that I thought he would. Definitely did not. So I don't know how I feel about Mikheyev. Going into the year, I felt a lot better than I do now. Like, at first I thought, man, Mikheyev could be like a middle six kind of guy. You know, he's kind of like Hyman, but I don't think he is, because he doesn't have that finish ability that Hyman has. He doesn't have that that playmaking ability that he has. He has the motor. He has the heart. He's got the willingness to dig for pucks, but that offensive ability that, you know, I didn't realize Hyman had, I guess. Mikheyev, I don't think has it at all. I just, you know, I get it. At Mikheyev's age, I didn't know Hyman had it either, so he could blossom into that. But that was a bit of a disappointing rookie sophomore year after an encouraging rookie season, I would say. But I think he's got one more year left on his deal, and he's exempt from the expansion draft because he's only played 2 pro seasons. And I would be shocked. If they moved on from him, because, you know, he's not on an expensive contract. And as a third liner, you know, I think they like what they see out of him. I think that they'll keep him around a little bit. Wayne Simmons, the Wayne train. Mixed bag out of Wayne Simmons, I would say. I'm probably a little bit less happy with how the Simmons outcome, the outcome of the Simmons signing the most, I would say. 7 goals, 2 assists, 9 points in 38 games. But that's not really what we brought Simmons in to do. We brought him in to kind of be an energy starter, a guy who is going to be aggressive, you know, lay some big hits, get this bench going. And we saw that in the first game of the year where he dropped the mitts and fought, I believe it was Ben Sherratt, and that sparked the comeback for the Maple Leafs in Game 1 against Montreal. And I was like, let's go. I'm all on board the Wayne train. Let's go. And then he got hurt. It was never really the same. Didn't give you, I think, enough in the physicality department. Didn't do anything in the playoffs, like not even a face wash, didn't lay a hit. Like, he just didn't really do much of anything. And for me, that was a big-time fail. And I know that it was a pretty cheap contract, and it was a one-year show-me deal. He didn't show me. And I don't think I'd bring back Wayne Simmons next year. I don't think I would. I think that his game just dropped off a little bit too much for me. And Simmons isn't someone who I'd be very, he wouldn't be high on my list of priorities for guys, the free agents that I want to call. And I'll do that probably next week. We'll take a look at all the UFAs and you know, kind of see who we want to bring back, who we don't, what their market's going to be like. But Simmons, I didn't think that he had a very good season. He was okay, but definitely not what I expected him to be. I thought he had a little bit more game left in him, but that proved to not be the case. And so Wayne Simmons, for me, I don't bring him back. A little bit of a failed experiment there. So, you know, of the old guys that were brought in, Jumbo was a failed experiment. Simmons was a failed experiment. Bringing Spezza back worked out 100%. And I think the other guy who was brought in, I guess, as an experiment, a one-year show-me deal, would be Zach Bogosian on the back end. So, and I think that actually worked out in spades, much like the Jason Spezza deal. But I'm going to talk about the defenseman tomorrow. So that's what tomorrow's podcast is going to be all about. We went through the forwards today. Tomorrow we'll go through the defenseman, and I'll be able to give my thoughts on what I thought of all of those guys and what their seasons were like and what I believe their role with this club will be going forward. But that's going to do it for me here today on the podcast. I'd like to thank you all for listening and supporting the show. You'd subscribe to the Locked On Leafs podcast on all podcasts and platforms. Receive daily Leafs content. Follow myself on Twitter at @Mickey_Canuck. Follow the show at Locked On Leafs. I'll be back with another episode tomorrow. But until then, keep it locked right here on Locked On Leafs.